I'd like to just comment for a few minutes, and this will be transcribed and up on the internet at our webpage. I'd like to comment for just a few minutes, and I'd like to ask Charlie then to give his thoughts on the matter of David Sokol and the purchase of Lubrizol stock. You saw in the movie a clip from the Solomon situation, and that occurred almost 20 years ago. It'll be 20 years ago this August. And at the time, that occurred almost 20 years ago. It'll be 20 years ago this August. And at the time, there was a Sunday. Charlie was there, and I was elected the chairman at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon or so, I think, that on a Sunday at Solomon. And I went down to address a press group, and almost the first, somewhere in the early questions, somebody sort of asked me, you know, what happened? And I'd just gotten to Solomon fairly recently, so I didn't know too much about it. But the phrase that came out of my mind then, out of my mouth then, sometimes my mind and my mouth are coordinated, the phrase that came out of my mouth then was that what had happened was inexplicable and inexcusable. Now it's 20 years later, and looking back on Solomon, I still find what happened inexplicable and inexcusable. I will never understand exactly why some of the events that transpired did transpire. And to some extent, in looking at what happened a few months ago with Dave Sokol's failure to notify me at all that he'd had any kind of contact with Citigroup. In fact, he directed my attention to the fact that they represented Lubrizol and never said a word about any contact with them. And then the purchases of stock immediately prior to recommending Lubrizol to Berkshire, for reasons that are laid out in the audit committee report, which I urge you to read and which is on our website, I don't think there's any question about the inexcusable part that Dave violated in that the code of ethics. He violated our insider trading rules, and he violated the principles I laid out. I lay out every 2 years in a direct personal letter to all of our managers, and which I've been doing for a long time. So you can read the audit committee report about that. The inexplicable part is somewhat, it's inexplicable, but I'd like to talk about it a little bit because I will tell you what goes through my mind in respect to it. One interesting point is that Dave, to my knowledge at least, made no attempt to disguise the fact that he was buying the stock. I mean, you know, you read about insider trading cases and people set up trusts in Luxembourg, or they use neighbors who know neighbors, or they use third cousins, they have various ways of trying to buy the stock so that when it's later that FINRA, a supervising organization, looks at the trading activity in the months prior to a deal, they do not see names that jump out at them as being associated with the deal. As to my knowledge, Dave did nothing like that. So he was leaving a total record as to his purchases. Now, I think at least usually and maybe always, we are queried after any deal. We are asked who knew about it when. And we supply a list of whether it's people at the law firm or people that are in a secretarial position at our place or the law firm. We give them a list of everybody that might have known or did know about the deal prior to the public announcement. And I don't know whether they do that 100% of the time, but certainly it's my experience that you get that. And then a while later, you get a list of names of people that FINRA, again, has picked up as trading it, and they ask you whether any of those names ring a bell with you. So they're trying to put together whether anybody did any inside trading ahead of time. So the odds that if you're trading in your own name and you're on that list of people who know of a deal ahead of time, the odds that it's not going to get picked up seem to me that are very much against you. But to my knowledge, Dave did not disguise the trading, which, you know, that's somewhat inexplicable that if he really felt he was engaging in insider trading and that knew the penalties that could be attached to it, that he essentially did it right out in the open. So, a second fact, which is less puzzling, but Dave obviously has a net worth in very high numbers. He made, I think, close to $24 million. He earned it from Berkshire last year, and we got our money's worth. But he did get $24 million, too. So I would say that there are plenty of activities in this world that are unsavory, that are committed by people with lots of money. So I don't regard that as totally puzzling. But I will give you one instance that does make it puzzling. It makes it very puzzling to me. We bought MidAmerican at the end. Berkshire Hathaway bought MidAmerican at the end of 1999. Berkshire Hathaway bought about 80%. Walter Scott, who I just introduced, in his family was the second largest holder, I think something over 10%. And then two operating people, Dave Sokol, the senior one, owned or had options on a big piece, and Greg Abel, a terrific partner of Dave's, also had a piece. And Walter Scott, and I've told this story privately a few times, but not, I don't think I've done it publicly. Walter Scott came to me a year or two after we'd bought it, and Walter said, "I think we ought to have some special compensation arrangement for Dave and Greg if they perform in a really outstanding manner." And he said, I think maybe he suggested something involving equity, and he saw me turn white. So he said, "Why don't you design one and let me know?" So I just scribbled something out on a yellow pad. It didn't take me 5 minutes. And we called it, sort of in honor of Charlie, although he didn't know about it, we called it the Lollapalooza. And it provided for a very large cash payout, which I'll get to in a second, based on the 5-year compounded gain in earnings. And we were starting from a high base. In other words, this was not from any depressed level. And we set a figure that no other utility company in the United States was going to come close to. But if that figure were achieved, we were going to give $50 million to Dave and $25 million to Greg Abel. And I had Dave come to the office, and I said, "Here's what Walter and I are thinking. And what do you think of this plan?" And it had these figures on per share that, like I say, move forward at 16% compounded per year. And then I said, "Here's the payout." And he looked at it for just a very short period of time. And he said, "Warren, this is more than generous." But he said, "There's just one change you should make." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "You should split it equally between me and Greg. Instead of being $50 million for me and $25 for Greg, it should be 37.5 apiece." So I witnessed, and Walter witnessed, and he talked to him about it. We witnessed Dave voluntarily, without any, Greg had nothing to do with it. He wasn't there. we saw Dave transfer over $12.5 million, getting no fanfare, no credit whatsoever, to his, in effect, junior partner. And I thought that was rather extraordinary. And what really makes it extraordinary is that $3 million, you know, 10 or so years later, would have led to the kind of troubles that it's led to. I find that is really the fact that I find inexplicable, and I think I'll probably, you know, it's 20 years after Solomon. If 20 years from now, Charlie will be 107, and we won't mention what I'll be. But I think 20 years from now, I will not understand what causes a man to voluntarily turn away $12.5 million to an associate without getting any credit for it in the world. And then 10 or so years later, buy a significant amount of stock a week before he talked to me. And when he talked to me about Lubrizol, it was either the 14th or 15th. He says it was 14th, and I have no reason to disagree with that. The only reason I couldn't say specifically was I had 8 university groups. I mean, 160 students in on that Friday. That's the only thing it shows, and I spent most of the day with them. And the 10K and the 10Q that got printed out on Saturday had that date on them, the 15th, when I looked at Lubrizol for the first time. Might be interested in knowing. I've been looking up 10Ks and 10Qs for 20 or 30 years, but I don't know how to print them out. So fortunately, Tracy Britt was in the office, and I said, "Tracy, would you print this damn thing out? I don't know how to do it yet." But that's that is why I don't know whether it's the 14th or the 15th. The 10Q says the 15th. But at that time, when Dave called me on it, he said nothing about contact with Citigroup or anything of the sort, and he and I said, "I don't know anything really about the company." He said, "Well, take a look at it. You know, it might fit Berkshire." And I said, "Well, how come?" And he said, "Well, I've owned it, and it's a good company. It's a Berkshire type company, and you know, I obviously made a big mistake by not saying, 'Well, when did you buy it?' But I think if somebody says I've owned the stock, you know, it sounds to me like they didn't buy it the previous week." There we are with a situation which is sad for Berkshire, sad for Dave, still inexplicable in my mind, and we will undoubtedly get more questions on it. We'll be glad to answer them. Charlie, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I think it's generally a mistake to assume that rationality is going to be perfect, even in very able people. We prove that pretty well, regularly.
Do you have any explanation for the irrational?
Yeah, I think hubris contributes to it.
Well, we've gotten quite a bit out of them, folks.